Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to Top of the Morning on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. For today, we will continue with our series of fixed income conversations as we will reference the Fixed Income Strategist Report from the UBS Chief Investment Office, that titled Keeping a Credit Eye on AI. This report is now available for you up on ubs.com/CIO. Joining me for the conversation today, two contributors to the report. Glad to welcome back Leslie Falconio, Head of Taxable Fixed Income Strategy for the Americas, as well as Barry McAlinden, Senior Fixed Income Strategist for the Americas. So with that, Leslie, Barry, thank you for dropping by Top of the Morning to spend some time today with our listeners and our clients. I know we have a lot we want to get through, so let's jump right into it. And Barry, just looking through the Fixed Income Strategist report, there is a lot of coverage on AI debt funding and how new issue supply has been a focus for credit investors. How has this been evolving, Barry? What have you been picking up on?
Yeah, Dan, I think maybe what's been surprising, so we've had gross supply in investment-grade corporates north of $400 billion year-to-date, but the bulk of it hasn't been from the large tech hyperscalers. The bulk of it has come from financials, and that's kind of normal as we start the year. Historically, it's large banks, you know, that are the largest issuers of investment-grade public debt issues. But obviously, the market had been anticipating an influx of supply from tech companies, especially the big four, big five hyperscalers, mega-cap companies. And, you know, that was expected coming into the year. That reflected the large issuance that these companies placed at the end of last year in 2025. So the expectations were high coming in. Now, we did see two of the hyperscalers issue bonds in February. And, you know, I think one thing that kind of placated the markets a bit was, you know, first Oracle, you know, their cadence was such that they said, we're just going to do the one issuance this for the full year and get it over with in February. So that took place. And I think, you know, the investors were more understanding how they could basically kind of think about the cadence of issues for the full year. And then the second was with Alphabet, where they issued a tranche in the U.S. dollar market, but they also issued in other currencies as well, in the U.K. and Switzerland. So diversifying it out, not just flooding the market. So I think kind of set the tone, again, number one, where tech wasn't the largest sector to issue in the IG market. And number two, you know, just the more measured cadence, you know, has set a good tone so far. So the issuance has been digested really well for investors. Now, you know, I think going forward, you know, that should continue to be the case, especially, you know, if we're considering the four hyperscalers with AA and Microsoft with a AAA rating. To the extent that these companies issue bonds now, you're not paying, you're not sacrificing as much spread as you used to for these high credit ratings. They're trading a bit more in line with the overall investment grade index. So, you know, I think credit investors more, you know, from the institutional standpoint, view this favorably to the extent that you can, you know, capture these high quality credits without necessarily sacrificing spread like was the case in prior years. So look, I think going forward, we expect the issuance calendar to remain quite robust. You know, it seemed like the high end of street estimates were about $2 trillion gross for investment grade corporates headed into the year. I think this is looking a little bit more likely, but, you know, just kind of say that, you know, yeah, large issued placements of bonds is nothing new for investment-grade corporates. It's something that the marketplace is used to. And in fact, just this week, we had Abbott Labs in the healthcare sector issue a $20 billion multi-tranche deal on Monday when we had the big snowstorm in the Northeast. So they were able to place that. It really didn't capture too much headlines. You know, not quite as flashy as what's going on in the tech sector, but again, yeah, nothing really too uncommon as it relates to large deals in the investment grade corporate market. So yeah, we think that, you know, it should be able to be placed pretty well, you know, to the extent that we see issuance going forward.
So with that backdrop in mind, Barry, how do you see AI disruption affecting investment grade fundamentals?
Yeah, I mean, obviously fundamentals, there's a lot of different components to this. Right now, fundamental backdrop is pretty positive just from an overall growth picture. Earnings have been strong. you know, still looking for earnings to be strong for the full year. I think that's a very strong underpinning, right, for fundamentals. As long as, you know, debt growth doesn't exceed earnings growth, you know, leverage, you know, is only rising in a more modest fashion to the extent that it does rise. But look, I mean, fundamentals are pretty much near peak levels, right, coming off of years where corporations were a little bit more conservative with their balance sheets. They stocked up on cash piles in the, you know, kind of the COVID years. They've since, for the most part, paid that down. You know, so the fundamentals are going to deteriorate. But I think, you know, the volatility that we're seeing right now within credit is more about dispersion, where you see, you know, certain sectors reflecting a higher credit risk premium in the form of spread. And it's not just within tech, too. Like, even if you look at investment grade or even in high yield, you see sectors like insurance or financial services, you know, where there's some like BDC component, business development companies within IG. So, you know, it's risk premium being embedded, you know, within these various sectors, more so in the high yield and leveraged loan markets. And I'm sure Leslie, you know, we'll get into that. But within investment grade, I think this is what we expect to see, not so much widespread fundamental deterioration, but rather just higher risk premium, higher dispersion. And, you know, for credit investors, look, it's not so much about the growth trajectory and the equity multiple. It's more about, you know, being able to satisfy your principal and interest, you know, your cash flows. So cash flows are key in credit. And I think, you know, as it relates to investment grade, you know, we expect most of the large, diverse, you know, companies with stronger balance sheets to fare pretty well. Obviously, you know, we would expect to see more dispersion, higher risk premiums in other segments of the credit markets that embed a little bit more credit risk, you know, like high yield and loans.
Thank you, Barry. Something we'll continue to keep an eye on, though. If we shift focus to the broader asset class, Leslie, to welcome you into the conversation, just reflecting back on February, what a month it has been. What factors, Leslie, and developments drove fixed income sector performance over the past month?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's what a month it definitely has been. I mean, we have, you know, the 10-year treasury yield at around a 3.97 this morning. You know, the 10-year yield has fallen over 25, 26 basis points this month, which really, it's actually the largest decline that we've seen in over a year. And I know that seems hard to believe given all the, you know, political, geopolitical, you know, fundamental, you know, monetary policy type of drivers that have faced the market over the past year. But frankly, most months have been you kind of, you know, go down in yield and you go back up, or you go up and you go down. The net change really hasn't been that much. This month, however, has been different, right? We've had a 10-year yield that's come down, that's broken down below 4% this morning, not by a tremendous amount. You know, and I think that this sort of, you know, tails under what Barry was speaking about, which, by the way, he did a great job in the lead on the FIZ, just in terms of the uncertainty surrounding AI, the uncertainty surrounding software, a lot of this is, you know, twofold. One is that we know that spread product overall in fixed income, right? It's been tight. It's been, you know, it's compressed. Financial conditions have been loose. So we've had this, you know, tighter spreads entering into the year. And that's one of the things that we spoke about as well, is that most of your returns are going to be due to compounding income. But you've had tight spreads and you've had a lot of headline risk and negative sentiment. Negative sentiment can go a long way, even if the fundamentals don't support that. So what we've seen right now in February is the 10-year yield come down. But also the Fed fund projection to the amount of cuts in 2026 really hasn't necessarily deviated that much. You're still looking at a little, like two, maybe a little bit over two cuts, which is, you know, in line with CIO's expectation of two cuts in 2026, the first being in June. But it is the 2027 path that has changed. And what I mean by that, Dan, is that, you know, the market was expecting in 2027 they actually had the Fed funds moving up. Now, while no one would say, you know, come out and say this is a hike, right, the projection was higher. That now has been removed. So now the market's starting to price in, you know, the potential of cuts, not just two in 26, but some in 27 as well. And so that's the first part. The second is obviously, of course, the volatility that we've seen, you know, in the marketplace regards to some of the things that Barry had spoke about, whether it's supply or the concern of supply. And a lot of this, too, the differences that we're seeing and why this is a bit of an enigma, if you will, is that when you look at the actual fundamentals, when I look at things such as, you know, economic surprise indices, they've actually been coming higher in than what the market is projecting, meaning that, you know, things like non-farm payroll improved, we have sentiment improved, you know, claims continue to drop lower. You had a PCE that was well above, that was above expectations, even though the CPI continues to be dragged down by, you know, lower rents and lower housing, things like that. So you actually, the fundamentals are actually pretty strong right now, right? And everyone knows that the GDP that we saw in the fourth quarter was dampened by the government shutdown. And if you remove those dampening impacts, you have like about a 2.4% GDP, which is not weak. CAO is expecting for 2026 in the fourth quarter over quarter, a 2.5-2.6% GDP. Again, it's not weak. So you have these two competing forces. And I think the question is, how long really negative sentiment lasts, if this snowballs, or frankly, if this is just simply overdone.
So with those performance drivers in mind, Leslie, what is CIO's current guidance, recommendations for fixed income investors when it comes to positioning?
Yeah, I mean, we have been, and I want to, you know, tout the fixed income team on this too. I mean, we have been fortunate that our, you know, preferred allocations, if you will, what we consider attractive, has been more on the securitized side versus the corporate credit side. And what I mean by that, you know that we've been a big supporter of agency MBS here, not only because they've been cheap, even though they were the best performer in 2025, but they also was announced they had the support by, you know, GSEs buying. You know, we also have things like CMBS. And a lot of these allocations have been worse versus things like IG corporates. Not that we think there's some, you know, fundamental issue within the IG corporate market, because we don't. Balance sheets are strong. Leverage is low. The household balance sheets are strong as well. It's really just the fact that this negative sentiment has really started to snowball. So we've had what we call securitized product long versus some of this corporate credit, and it's worked out very well. And if we look at days like today and days like yesterday, when you have these certain performance driver scares, whether it's software, what's happening in private credit, you know, all these kinds of things have a tendency to impact the credit market, high yield, senior loans, more than they would, say, the securitized market, such as CMBS or agency MBS. So we've actually had those allocations on, and even though those sectors have done very well, we continue to hold them. Now, one of the things that we look at now is that now that IG has widened out a little bit, not a tremendous amount, but it's a little bit wider. We think that they could start to be worth a look at, even with high yield and loans that have had some headwinds, particularly in the loan side. They are starting to offer or start to feel a relative value plays in the near term. But at the end of the day, when you have this kind of negative sentiment, it's better to step aside. We stay in the high quality. We stay with the compounding that income, and we kind of wait until, you know, some of the sentiment passes, which we believe that it will. And we know we have a very strong outlook for the equity market at the end of the year. You know, we think growth is going to be stronger. We're only looking for two cuts. We are not looking for anything in terms of the recessionary kind of rollout for 26. All these still play well for risk assets. We're just going through a point in time where you're getting some clearing levels, a little bit of uncertainty. So we'll step aside and wait for things to calm before we start to move into lower credit.
Well, Leslie and Barry, thank you both for dropping by Top of the Morning today to keep our listeners, our clients informed on what's driving performance in fixed income, how to position accordingly, and for hitting on some of these trends. Thank you again for dropping by.
Thanks very much.
Thanks very much.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management Business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/working with us. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.